Good evening, and welcome to this Christian Science lecture, Health is a Spiritual Reality. I'll just start with a friendly reminder. If you do have a mobile with you, you might want to silence it or turn it off at this point. Our speaker this evening is Christian Science teacher and practitioner, Eloisa Gelber-Rives. Eloisa bridges cultures and languages. She was raised in a multilingual Brazilian family and speaks no fewer than six languages: English, Spanish, Portuguese, German, French, and Italian. After earning a degree in sociology and politics at the University of Sao Paulo, Brazil, Eloisa came to the United States and began work as a translator for the Christian Science Publishing Society in Boston, Massachusetts. She went on to serve as associate editor for this same organization, which also publishes the Pulitzer Prize-winning international newspaper, the Christian Science Monitor. And in addition to serving as managing editor of The Herald, Christian Science, an international magazine published in 13 languages, Eloisa has been a guest speaker and co-host on the magazine's radio edition, broadcast throughout the United States and in several parts of the world. She says she has always been impelled by a deep desire to help mankind. And so for over 25 years, she has been helping people through prayer as a Christian Science practitioner. She's also been speaking to the public as a world tour lecturer and has been a certified Christian Science teacher for over 15 years. Eloisa will be available following the talk if you would like to speak to her. So without further ado, please help me to warmly welcome our speaker, Eloisa.
Thank you so much, Emily, for your very generous and kind introduction. And welcome and good evening, all of you. I'm so happy to have you here for this opportunity for us to talk a little bit about our favorite subject, health. It's something that it occupies thought these days so much. Actually, you know, sometimes I think years ago people didn't have this frenzy about cultivating health that is prevalent in our society today. Today, health is something that people need to have, to acquire, to cultivate, and almost to buy. It's almost as if people who have a lot of money can buy a lot of health, and those who don't, maybe not that much. If I asked anybody, how do you know that if you have health? How do you know when you have health? How do you feel your health? Nobody feels health. It's natural. When you have health, you don't feel anything. You do everything you need to do. You do everything you want to do, and you don't think about it. The problem is to be constantly trying to control health or to acquire health or to monitor health. That's not necessary. If we think of 20 or 30 years ago, that's not the way it was. Today, it's almost a frenzy about what you eat and how much you run, how many hours of sleep or walking or how many laps one does in the pool. Those things should be done for fun: swimming, walking, jogging, practicing sports. It's nothing wrong with it. But they should be the result of wanting to do something and enjoying it. It can be enjoyed. It's not an obligation. It's not a do or die thing. If I don't do it, I'm going to lose my health. I would like to see people happier about their way of enjoying being in the open air and enjoying some exercise and some fun. So, very often today, people think that the Bible is a very old book of doctrine that's overcome. It's passé, we don't need it anymore. It's something of the past, it's doctrines that apply to another era. We don't need that anymore. We don't need to think about God. Science has overcome that, and it's no longer necessary. I feel sorry when I hear that, because the Bible contains the wisdom that brings health. There are so many examples of health restored through acknowledging the truths of the Bible. So it's really a pity to see people thinking that the Bible is a doctrine book of the past. We're no longer thinking that way. You have to believe without understanding, and today people don't function that way. It's true. We don't need to believe in what we don't understand. But that's not the truth of the Bible. We can study the Bible and receive powerful inspiration. I think you would agree with me that if we think of God, we grow. It's worthwhile. It makes us richer. It makes us better. Sometimes people say, how on earth can you reconcile religion with science? Religion is something that you believe. It's personal. It's subjective. And it's questionable. Science is not questionable. It's the product of research. And the two don't meet. Well, I wonder, those characters in the Bible of 5,000, 3,000, 2,000 years ago, they knew something. They knew something, and they were so sure of what they knew, and it enabled them to restore harmony and health. There are so many examples of it in the Bible. So the Bible can be looked at intelligently. It can be studied with intelligent inspiration. And that is way above and beyond what is called laws of matter. So there is something about understanding God that really can push us into a much better life. The discoverer and founder of Christian Science is Mary Baker Eddy, a woman of the 19th century that was born in the United States. And she came from a family deeply enrooted in the Bible, so all her knowledge from very early age was anchored in the Bible. And her only desire in life was to alleviate human suffering. She had a lot of suffering herself because she was a sick child. And all her life she was looking for relief and also an opportunity to help others to find their health and their happiness. She studied the Bible since she learned how to read. She learned how to read in the Bible when she was 4 years old. And in her study of the Bible, she always found this prevailing sense of God's love. It was so clear to her that God is love, and she found it over and over throughout her very tender young years and throughout her youth. So her conviction that God is love never left her, but she was always trying to understand more how does that apply in our daily lives. The cultures of older times, of thousands of years ago, that didn't know the Bible, that didn't know the teaching of God as an infinite love that is always present wherever you are. A God that is not represented by an image, that is not confined to a picture, to a statue, but a God that is always present, that is entirely made of the substance of spirit, that is the cause of everything that exists, and a God that is a law, the principle that governs the universe. She was always looking for those things, and the Bible gave her that opportunity. And I was saying that people of older times, biblical times, who who didn't know the Bible, who didn't study the Bible, and who didn't have this spiritual concept of God. That's what we call pagans. They didn't have what we in our Western world understand as God. We call them pagans. And they very often had the culture of the physical body as a most important aspect of their culture. That's where we have the pharaohs, the Caesars. The dominant figure in the culture was a king, an emperor, who was to be adored as a god and who had to have a perfect physical body. We have the Greco-Roman culture that invaded the country where Jesus was born. And it's a culture that preaches and practices the cultivation of the physical body as a means of establishing a culture and a religion. And sometimes I wonder if that influence is not appearing today for us in our culture, which is so devoted to the culture of the physical body. Today, people have to belong to a gym, they have to go to a spa, they have to belong to a fitness center, otherwise they're in danger of losing their health. Health became something that needs to be cultivated physically. The beauty of the physical body has acquired in recent years an importance that sort of leaves behind the nature of God as not a physical body, but as an infinite source of harmony and a source of health. So we'll talk a little bit about those things. You know, in the Bible, there is a passage that I like very much where it talks about how God maintains us. Those of you who speak French, and I think a lot of people do, and others who have studied either a Romance language or Latin at school, have learned that there is a word in Latin which is manu and means hand. That's the origin of the word man in French, hands. And there's a verb in Latin that is tenere, which means to hold. And that's tenir in French. So maintenir, to maintain, means to hold in the hand. And the Bible has an interesting passage that uses that word in Psalms. We're talking about God. I'm not going to look it up because I know it. It says, he maintaineth my lot. God maintaineth my lot. My lot doesn't mean my luck. It means everything that concerns me. God maintains, holds in the hand, not that God has physical hands, but it's in his thought. God is maintaining our everything. And in Science and Health, Mary Baker Eddy wrote a sentence which I think is a perfect equivalent to that, he maintaineth my lot. It says, the divine mind that made man maintains his own image and likeness. Of course, she is based on the Bible statement that God is made in the image and likeness of God in the first chapter of Genesis. That's the first mention of man. God made man in the image and likeness of God. And she's saying he maintains his own image and likeness. So I think it's nice to think of that God maintains his image and likeness. He maintains our health. And how does that happen? It happens when we turn our thoughts to a higher understanding of what God is. God as the principle that governs the universe. And principle means law. The law that governs the universe. The cause of everything that exists. And the substance of all things. Of course, God is infinite. I think everybody agrees with that. Doesn't matter what teaching we have. God is infinite, and we also agree that God is everywhere. Right? So there's no place where God isn't present. And if he's present everywhere, he fills the whole universe. This infinite universe filled with God's presence, as far or as close as you can imagine. There is no place where the principle that governs the universe, which is God, isn't present. I think it's worthwhile to think a little bit of what that means. And I will tell you how somebody I know got introduced to the teachings of Christian Science and was completely restored to health. This is a woman from Buenos Aires, Argentina, who was, for a few years, she became very ill. She had lost her husband. She was very depressed, lost all interest in life, didn't want anything. She had a young adult son who later became my husband, so I know the story. And they didn't know anything about Christian Science, but this woman was about, I mean, she had been given about 3 months to live. And she had no interest in life, so she didn't want to go on living. At that point, a friend of hers gave her a copy of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, which is the book that Mary Baker Eddy eventually came to write to explain what she had discovered. This woman in Buenos Aires read the book, and as she was reading, she read it during 3 months, nonstop. She began to think that the cause of her life was God. She began to see the spiritual substance of that infinite God, which is not a piece of matter, and began to see that God is really the cause of everything that exists. As these thoughts expanded for her, she didn't understand everything, but she recovered her interest in life. She recovered her sense of love for mankind, interest in people. And after 3 months of reading, she was completely well. She went to the doctor. The doctor told her she was completely restored. She was healed. It was hard for him to accept it. He said she was going to die in 3 months. But he had to agree she was okay. Then the friend who had given her the book invited her to go to the Christian Science Church. And she said, no way, I'm not going to go to a church I don't know. She was very afraid of it. She was afraid it could be a cult, it could be a sect, it could be dangerous, it could be involving esoteric practices and things that she was told, no way. So she said, no, I'm not going. However, she knew she was restored to health. She had to agree with that and couldn't dismiss it completely. So she asked two trusted friends of her late husband to go to that church for her to investigate it and see if it would be safe for her to go there. They did. They were very well received. They found out that there was nothing mysterious, nothing mystic, nothing dangerous, that the service consisted of readings from the Bible and from this book, Science and Health, together, one balancing the other, that they sang beautiful hymns, they prayed the Lord's Prayer together. So they came back to her and say, it's very pleasant. It's not a sect. It's not a cult. And it's not tradition either, because they were very well received, being completely new. So they wanted this woman to go with them, and she went, attended the service, was very well received, made friends immediately, began to attend that church and study the teachings of Christian Science. She lived 25 years more, a very healthy and productive life. And her son, this young man, who had never read the Bible, he knew about it. It was a family that believed in God and respected the Bible, but he had never read it. He felt he had to read it. He began to read Science and Health and realized that in order to read Science and Health, he needed to read the Bible. And only by reading the Bible with Science and Health, he could make sense of it. So he began to read those books, and eventually he found that that was his way of life. And he became, of course, a very deep student of Christian Science, both of them. Well, their lives were completely transformed, and this is just one example of thousands of people who have found their lives restored to harmony and to health through the study of Christian Science. I might add, I didn't say this in the French lecture, my father found Christian Science exactly 100 years ago in Switzerland, in Zurich. He was spending 5 years there. He was a teenager. He was about to die of pneumonia. The doctor said he had 2 months to live and had to stay in bed. My grandmother took him to a Christian scientist, a Christian Science practitioner, who is somebody who helps others to understand Christian Science. During the visit, my father was completely healed. And he ran back home, ran up the stairs, and he knew he was another person after that. That was 100 years ago, and my father lived nothing less than 75 years more. And was a very good swimmer and a very good sportsman, which he was condemned not to be. So the number of cases and examples, and in the life of every Christian scientist, there's constant proof that understanding that God is the cause of everything, the law that governs everything, and the substance of all existence, has a restoring power that brings harmony to our existence. Jesus knew that, and what he knew was a science. We learn in Christian Science that the knowledge that Jesus had was what enabled him to restore people to health. We call them miracles because when you don't know how things happened, it seems to be a mystery, and that he was the only one who was able to do that. However, he never said that. On the contrary, he said, those who believe in me, the works that I do, shall they do also. That he wasn't limiting what he did to himself. He said, and greater works than these shall they do. So he was passing the ball to his followers. They too will be able to do this if they understand. And then he said, because I go to my Father. He said he was going to his Father, God. He was going back to his Father. He came from his Father. He was the Son of God. He was going back to his Father. He didn't say he was God. He said God was his Father. And that understanding gave him the certainty to convey to others this need of understanding what he taught. And proving that what he taught was true because it restored harmony in people's lives. Christian Science enables us to see the power of intelligent understanding God as not mystic, not mysterious, and not exclusive of anybody. It is available to everybody. It doesn't exclude anyone. The difference, sometimes people say, but what's the difference between the teachings of Mary Baker Eddy and many other important religious characters in the history of mankind who have had magnificent teachings, who have had magnificent proofs of God's power in restoring life, and even in not dying, there are examples. However, Mary Baker Eddy left the teaching in a book and in a system of learning that makes it available to anyone who wants to study. It's not an occasional episode. And that makes a big difference. It's not an occasional miraculous healing and somebody's healed of something and thank you very much, goodbye. It's not that. The teaching transforms people's lives and makes them better individuals, better citizens. And they can follow it and do the same thing if they want to learn it. That's a little different. The other big difference when they say, well, there are important religious figures in other cultures other than our Western world that comes from the Bible culture. There are important religious figures who did things similar and taught things similar to what Jesus taught. Yes, and we admit that and are grateful because they did wonderful things and their teachings helped mankind. But nobody did what Jesus did. Nobody endured persecution, being killed, and coming back. There are people in the Bible and in other cultures who didn't die. But Jesus came back. Nobody did that. If somebody had done that, we'd know it. Mankind would never forget something like that. Today there are intellectuals who say that there is no physical proof of Jesus' existence. So we can question that. He said, My word shall not pass away. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words shall not pass away. We quote him all the time. His words have not passed away. So it doesn't matter how many people may be saying around, there's no physical proof of him. Those words are substance. They are substantial. They have not passed away. Neither those words nor other words that he has said. And those who try to understand them and understand the logic of his teachings and the logic of the whole Bible find it. Because it is there. It's not a mysterious, miraculous book that only a select number of people can understand or do those works. It is logic. Mrs. Eddy explained that she took the inspired word of the Bible. She took the parts of the Bible that explain how we can understand God intelligently. Christian Science is not an accumulation of inherited traditions. And that's a very important thing to recognize. It doesn't matter. I just told you that my father found Christian Science 100 years ago. I'm second generation, so what? I don't inherit the knowledge of my father. I had to study myself. And people who have had a father, a grandfather, or a great-grandfather who was a student of Christian Science, that doesn't make a Christian Scientist. It's individual prayer, study, and desire to follow and to understand these teachings. That's something that is available to everyone, but it doesn't accumulate knowledge. Science is not accumulated tradition. Accumulated tradition is not scientific. It can be believed, but that doesn't prove it. To be credulous, to be naive about something, is not scientific. To be a believer, sincerely, without being able to explain, is not scientific. But to understand what we're talking about is a science, and it can be proved and demonstrated in our daily lives when we look at it sincerely. Jesus said once to his followers, I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. Those teachings that he left are explained for the world today. He did not leave us comfortless. He didn't leave mankind. I'm not talking about anybody in particular or of any group in particular. He didn't leave mankind comfortless. It's interesting that in Jesus' time, he was born in a country that was occupied by a foreign power, Rome. A country that knew the Bible and the teaching that there is only one God, that God is not a physical being, that God is to be seen as spirit, as ever-present, as all-power, and not to be represented in any form. The Bible says, thou shalt not make for thyself graven images. That was the teaching of the Bible. There were many, many aspects of the Bible culture which were offended by the invasion of a Greco-Roman culture which adored the beauty of the physical body. That happened in Jesus' time. It was a form of opposing and resisting what he was saying and what he brought with him. Are we seeing something similar happening in our society? That the physical body becomes more important and understanding God becomes secondary? We have that problem in our society. When God becomes secondary in a culture, dependence and enslavement to matter increases. It should be the other way around. The understanding of God should free people from physical suffering and from enslavement to material systems. We have a lot of research going on in our society of all kinds of sciences. What does research produce? It produces data. It produces information. It produces statistics. And statistics are percentages of how many times this happened. And if it happened this many times in percentage, it's going to do it again. And that's a law. Then studies prevail and show that another discovery was made and goes beyond that, and it's more advanced. And so what we call scientific knowledge out of research changes. It changes all the time. The researchers done today make researchers of 10 years ago surpassed. Passé. And the medicine of 500 years ago was barbarous. But it was the latest of the time. So research continues to produce new data. But the reality of God that Jesus knew 2,000 years ago and the prophets knew 3, 4, 5,000 years ago, and earlier, beyond what we know. They knew God. They heard the voice of God. They didn't need research. And because they understood it, they did things which were difficult to explain. But that was a science they knew. And because they looked for the knowledge of God so honestly and so independently of the appearance of the material senses, they realized that God, because God is love, reveals himself. That is called unfoldment, an unfoldment of God's reality to mankind. God wants to be known because God is love. Love doesn't hide. It's the nature of love to reveal itself. It's not the nature of love to make itself mysterious or unknown, or known only to a select number of people, or a select culture, or a select group. The nature of love has no limits, no barriers. And the very nature of God makes God unfold, reveal his own presence. To unfold means to take off the fold that covers. To discover is to take off the cover that hides. To reveal is to take off the veil that covers. All those words are kind of saying the same thing. God reveals himself, God unfolds himself. The truths of God can be discovered. They're not mysterious. They're available to anyone, not to a select group of people of any kind. So those ideas make a difference in how we think of God and how we pray. Praying is not asking God to do something as if he had done something wrong or failed to do something. It is an acknowledgement of what God has already done. And God didn't do anything wrong. So when we acknowledge what God has done as perfect, it comes to light. And it becomes what we call a healing. But God didn't make matter. God is the substance of the universe, and that substance is spirit. As we become aware that the presence of God is the presence of spirit that occupies all space, the appearance of a material reality yields to that fact. And the spiritual reality is always harmonious. We call it a healing. But it is a realization of the spiritual reality of God's presence. That's what happened to Mary Baker Eddy. During all her life, she studied the Bible and followed the teachings the way she was taught. She was taught to be in conformity with God's will, which included once in a while suffering, and that it needed to be accepted. She had read the Bible since very little, and she didn't agree with it. She didn't think that if God was love, God could not ask her to be tolerant or accept condemnation or accept suffering as if it were God's law or God's desire. She rebelled. And when it was time for her to join the church of her parents, which she wanted to join out of being obedient, she had to answer questions from the pastor. Do you agree with this? Do you believe in this? And in any church, when you want to join, you need to give proof that you agree with what that church teaches. And she stated very clearly that she did not agree with the condemnation. She did not agree with the predestination of some to be condemned to suffering, and that God caused suffering, and that we have to be patient with it. She didn't agree with it. That was a very difficult predicament for the pastor. How was he going to admit her when she was saying that she didn't agree with the doctrine? But he was a sensitive man, and he realized the honesty, the sincerity, and the devotion in her heart. And he accepted her with her protest. She stayed in that church for 37 years. Later in relation to her teens, not later in relation to 37 years of membership, she had many occasions in which to study the Bible and to look for the healing power that she saw in the Bible. She also looked for healing in medicine, in hypnotism, in some forms of alternative medicine that were popular in her time, in the middle of the 19th century, something similar to what we have today and we call alternative medicine, alternative means, and some even spiritual teachings which are not based on Bible teachings. She looked for that. She realized that if it wasn't anchored in the teachings of Jesus Christ, she couldn't take it. She saw that She needed to understand the mental nature of disease and the spiritual nature of healing. Healing is not mental. It's not one person exercising mental power over another. It is the spiritual understanding of God's presence. She had an accident at the age of 44. She slipped on an icy sidewalk and had a fall and had spinal injuries, which were examined, and the doctor said she would never walk again, probably. She agonized for 3 days in excruciating pain. And finally, she asked for a Bible and read an episode in which Jesus heals a crippled man. During those moments when she read it, something that she had already read hundreds of times, as all of us have, she realized the spiritual reality of God's presence as infinite, universal, ever-present, and ever-powerful. That realization in a split second gave her a feeling that life is God, and we cannot be separated from that. Immediately, she felt that she was recovering strength. She got up and was able to walk. Many others had episodes of healings like that. But she didn't think that was enough for her to be comfortable and recover her harmony in her life. She wanted the world to have it. So she dedicated her life to understanding better how that had happened. Studied the Bible for 3 years, and gradually the ideas of how it had happened were revealed to her. And as that happened, she began to take notes, and as a result, we have the book, which she later entitled Science and Health, with key to the scriptures, Science and Health. A science that enables us to understand the logic of the Bible that restores health. Later, she had to abandon her former church, which did not endorse her ideas, and found her own church, which is all over the world, and the teachings are available to anyone who honestly seeks for that truth. So the history of Mary Baker Eddy deserves to be known. She understood what the Christ is as not the person or personality of Jesus, but what he taught and what he left for mankind. And on that, she writes, in Science and Health, she writes something which I find very moving about the Christ. When she says the author, she's talking of herself. That was a style in the 19th century. The author became a member of the Orthodox Congregational Church in early years, which is what I was telling. Later, she learned that her own prayers failed to heal her, as did the prayers of her devout parents and the church. But when the spiritual sense of the creed was discerned in the science of Christianity, this spiritual sense was a present help. It was the living, palpitating presence of Christ's truth, which healed the sick. It wasn't easy for her to write this book and leave it for mankind. She had a lot of difficult moments to overcome and a lot of opposition. But she left it. It's here for anybody. She didn't keep it to herself. This wonderful moment of perception of what the Christ is, She could have kept it to herself and enjoyed the rest of her life. She had a hard time making it available for mankind, and she did it. For you, for me, and for anybody who wants it. So it's important for us to cultivate this spiritual ability to understand God and to understand the logic of the Bible. And it is a logic of unfoldment, not of building up to becoming better, but understanding that God made everything perfect and that God reveals it because He is love. Once a friend of mine, who was a Christian Science nurse, whose job was to take care of a patient, and as such, she had to stand up the whole day doing things and had very little opportunity to pause and rest. One day she began to feel a tremendous pain in one of her heels, and she couldn't put her foot on the ground. As a Christian Scientist, she prayed and she turned to God's presence, but she struggled for a couple of weeks praying, and the pain got worse. Finally, she called a Christian Science practitioner, which is a person who helps others through prayer to be healed and to understand better the teachings of Christian Science. The practitioner recommended to her not to try to improve her act and become better, but to find the unfoldment that Christian Science presents. And again, I have to read the passage in which she says, Christian Science presents unfoldment, not accretion. It manifests no material growth from molecule to mind, but an impartation of the divine mind to man and the universe. An impartation, she calls Christian Science an impartation of the divine mind to man and the universe. That impartation is available, and it unfolds itself. It reveals itself. It's not an accumulated knowledge. It is revelation that comes to the honest heart and restores health. My friend studied that and stayed with those thoughts for a couple of days. The pain began to diminish and disappeared. She was completely healed. This is just one more example. Sometimes people say, and I heard it recently, how do Christian Scientists take care of their health if they don't have their health checked all the time? And if they don't follow diets and exercise programs, some do. People are free to do whatever they want. But on the whole, Christian Scientists are healthy because they cultivate that health program of cultivating their spiritual understanding of God and keeping the diet that Jesus recommended. Not that which cometh into a man, but that which cometh out of a man makes him healthy. That's a pretty good diet to follow. Keep our thoughts clean. Keep our ideas pure. Clean our thoughts from hate, resentment, opinions. That's a pretty tough diet to follow. And it makes us healthier than counting how many ingredients or what the ingredients are in organic food or etc. So yes, there is something that needs to be done. There is a health care program, but it is different from what today is considered practical. So we need to cultivate our spiritual understanding of God. It is not a matter of spending all the time praying for God to do something. That would be very tiring. It's a matter of being all the time acknowledging recognizing that God's creation is harmonious and perfect. It's interesting that in French, the word grateful is reconnaissant. To reconnaître means to be grateful. And that means to reconnaître, to know again, to recognize the presence of God. We can do that, and that's a health program. Everything that could possibly be done in history to delete Jesus' presence, I'm using a very modern word, to silence the voice of the teachings of the master of Christianity, has been done. It couldn't delete them. His words keep being repeated. His teachings are not forgotten. We cannot allow them to be silenced. It's the same thing with the life and work of Mary Baker Eddy, who gave the explanation of this science for this era. Mary Baker Eddy brings those teachings and the understanding of the science of Christianity to the modern era. To this time, we cannot allow to let them be silenced. We need to know the life and works of Mary Baker Eddy and the truth about Mary Baker Eddy, and be careful not to be influenced by lies about her, just as there are lies about Jesus. We cannot accept them. We cannot allow the voice of truth to mankind to be silenced. I like the idea of communing with God. And communing, I'm not using it in the sense of the communion that happens in church as a ceremony, but the act of having the thought of God always present. That's a communion, being in constant remembrance of God's presence. Communing with God is the law that makes the appearance of evil disappear. Because Mrs. Eddy defines God as good, not as God is good. Good is God, which is different than being good. It's the noun, God, good. Good is an entity. Good is a power. And in the presence of that entity, evil has no entity. Evil is the supposition that God can be absent. But we have agreed that there is no place where God isn't present. That understanding eliminates the supposition, the suggestion, the usurping thought that there is a power apart from God. Either we agree that God is the only power, or we're contradicting ourselves. But we don't contradict ourselves. We know that God is all in all because Jesus said it, because it is in the Bible. God is love. God is spirit. These words were said by Jesus and by one of his disciples. We trust them. And there is nothing else in the infinitude of spirit and the infinitude of love. What we need to do is trust that, understand that, keep it in our thought. Again, communing with God is the law that makes the appearance of evil disappear. And that's prayer. That's not asking. It is praying. Mary Baker Eddy has, the first chapter of her book is called Prayer. And on page 2, which is very early in the book, she says, prayer cannot change the science of being, but it tends to bring us into harmony with it. Isn't that beautiful? So we don't pray to change God's reality. We pray to be put in harmony with it. She also says, asking God to be God is a vain repetition. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. And he who is immutably right will do right without being reminded of his presence. So it's not a matter of trying to tell God what we want and asking him to do it, but acknowledging the infinitude of his harmonious creation and putting ourselves in line with it. God doesn't need to be reminded of what he has to do. We need to be reminded of what we need to understand. That's prayer. And that is a way of finding health as a spiritual reality, because health is a spiritual reality. Thank you very much.